Journey to Wellness in Indian Country here on KUMD is funded in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Well, it was exciting enough back in 2014 when Melissa Boyd, who grew up on the Mille Lacs Reservation, started teaching an Ojibwe language, an intensive course for language learners to study one-on-one with an Ojibwe elder. And then she created the band's first pre-kindergarten language immersion program. She won a Bush Fellowship to help her to accomplish those goals. Last year, she won another Bush Fellowship. And we've got Melissa on the phone this morning to talk a little bit about all the work she's doing with that second fellowship. Hey, Melissa, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. Oh, this is exciting. One of the things that you want to do in your community is to help restabilize and renew the native language. We've talked a little bit on this program before about how integral language is to a culture, and you don't really understand until you discover what all has been lost when a language has been lost. Can you talk a little bit about your passion for your native language and why you feel it's so important that especially kids have that as a second language?
Absolutely. So first off, I just want to start off by saying thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really thrilled to be here with you. And then second, I just wanted to make a tiny correction that the first technical fellowship that I had with the Bush Fellowship was all just being a part of a Native Nation Rebuilders cohort. And so I had an opportunity to work with other leaders from other Indigenous nations from North Dakota and South Dakota and Minnesota to build nation-building strategies as opposed to the standard approach, what we've been kind of conditioned to do in our government systems. And so it was from there that I was able to think a little bit more broad about what am I doing and how am I impacting my community and how can I change my behavior so that I can have more impact. So a little bit about myself. I went to a rural public school in central Minnesota, and I went from kindergarten to 12th grade in the same school, and I was one of the few Native American students that graduated. And quickly after I began working on language, I realized that not many Indian children were graduating at either tribal schools or public schools. And during my master apprenticeship with Fluent Speakers, I noticed that the things that they were teaching me about myself as an Indigenous person, as an Anishinaabe person, those things weren't in the schools. They weren't in the tribal schools. They weren't in the public school curriculum. And there wasn't that kind of support about knowing who you were in the school system. And so I felt like we needed to make that connection. And while I was being taught by fluent speakers like Lee Staples and Millie Benjamin, Marge Anderson, our former chief executive, they convinced me, and they just said, well, we have a gap here. Somebody needs to take responsibility in making sure that children understand themselves through the language that was intended for them.
Melissa, can you? I'm really curious about something you said, and I want to ask you a more specific question about it. As you were going through the Native language program, you said that, you know, kids in tribal schools weren't doing as well, they weren't graduating. Kids in public schools weren't doing as well, they weren't graduating. What do you feel? Do you feel that it was the language, the additional teachings, or just that you were surrounded by elders that probably said, you will graduate?
No, I guess to give you more perspective or context, I didn't start working with elder speakers until after I graduated.
Okay.
High school. And so it was there that I was able to put the dots together. But the reason why Indian children don't graduate from high school is because the curriculum is not culturally responsive. it doesn't teach you about yourself or your issues or your community, your problems, your strengths, your history. So you have a whole group of kind of disenfranchised people that are kind of being run through the mill and kind of herded through school in a system that wasn't intended for them, by a language that wasn't intended for them. So essentially it's all foreign. And although we are English fluent people, what I gather from my elders is that our spirit is not responding to that the way that it's not being nurtured in the way that it was intended. And so you have high dropout rates. Not only that, but a lot of Native people have had very, very hard experiences in public school setting. And so the school system hasn't always been good to minorities. And so with that, we'd like to create a safe space for people, for whole communities to heal through gaining knowledge about themselves and their history, and then also through the lens that was intended by them. One of the beliefs is that our spirit doesn't speak English. So our spirit doesn't respond to English the way it would respond to Ojibwe language. And so when you nurture yourself through the language and you understand yourself as a person through a language that was intended for you, there's a great sense of pride and also a great sense of spiritual nourishment that's happening. And from there, gaining knowledge about your surroundings in your language is going to be ultimately beneficial, because then you have a foundation for cultural practice.
So it's more than just learning this word means this and this word means that. The learning of the language and the speaking of the language itself is part of healing and moving forward in a better way.
Absolutely.
So one of the other things that really piqued my curiosity was something that I read in a little bio about you that said that the Hawaiian nation had created 20,000 proficient indigenous speakers. Can you give an estimate so that we're sort of looking at apples to apples about like how many people there are in the Hawaiian nation versus maybe how many people there are in the Ojibwe nation, for example, here in Minnesota or in our area?
I'm very sorry that I don't have a population for you of the indigenous Hawaiian nation, but we have like 45,000 Minnesota Chippewa tribe members. That and that doesn't include Red Lake in Minnesota, and that's not including the surrounding Ojibwe communities in Wisconsin, Michigan, and North Dakota and Canada.
And Canada, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at any rate, they managed to create a whole bunch of proficient indigenous speakers, and one of the things that you will help to do with the fellowship was study how they did that. Tell us more. It just sounds like a fascinating project.
In the late 70s, there was a Hawaiian renaissance, and so they brought back hula dancing, and they brought back some of their traditional customs and the way that they sing, and then language became a part of kind of a mass movement. But in the 80s, they went and changed legislation, late 70s, early 80s, they changed legislation so that Hawaiian wasn't illegal to speak anymore. And then from there, they began a nonprofit called Aha Punanaleo, which is a language immersion nest. And that's where a group of 10 or 12 little preschoolers started out, and they went through every single grade. And so they had changed political systems, and they lobbied and they advocated, and there were a couple of PhDs, one by the name of Pila Wilson, who helped, and his family, his children, he married into the Hawaiians, and so their kids were in that cohort, and there was just a grassroots effort to build language in the system. And so they were very active in lobbying and advocating. And that was something that I wasn't 100% sure of myself when we started the preschool classroom here. I hadn't finished my my higher my degree. I was only speaking Ojibwe to preschoolers, and so I didn't really have the credibility that I needed in order to help mobilize it further to other grades, and I didn't have the licensure. And so one of the things that I learned from the Hawaiians is that you always have some people working on those things to cover the grade ahead of you, the next grade. And so they now have a preschool to PhD program all through Hawaiian Native Language, and that happened in the last about 35 years.
Wow. Do you feel as though with the people, with the skills and the information that you got about their system and the people now that you know back here in our area, do you think that something like that is possible or feasible or could be within the next 5 to 10 years?
Absolutely. I'm working relentlessly. Yes. My partner and I, what we started was having conversations with other people from other immersion programs within the state. And so from here, we'd like to kind of come together in a more organized way so that we can have, we can rely on one another for resources and meeting together to create the standard for educational requirements, benchmarks, and we want to kind of set our own pace, so to speak. The Hawaiian Nation is a group of islands, right? And so when you think about Indian communities in the state, we are essentially our own island. And so we want to kind of bring that together in order to have all like minds making decisions together for our benefit, for the betterment of our program.
And so they also, I'm sure, had to cope with, issues of distance learning because they couldn't get everybody necessarily together in the same physical space, and distance learning and that kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to mean some infrastructure changes? I'm thinking about how it's still really difficult in rural areas to get good, reliable, high-speed internet, or sometimes internet at all. Does that continue to be an issue as you go forward thinking about some of these things?
I'm sorry, can you clarify?
I know that in some areas, internet access is really hard to come by. And I know there has been a push in other parts of the country to say, hey, Indian country needs good, reliable internet access, or we can't attract business. And I would imagine that if you're going to be trying to stay in communication with people that are kind of spread about geographically, that you need to make sure that everybody's got good, reliable internet access.
Fortunately, right now, the communities that we're working with already have programs established within school systems, and the school systems that we're working with are all wired up. And so we haven't had that issue necessarily, but While meeting at Wadukadadding Immersion School in Hayward, Wisconsin, a couple of months ago, there were communities from the Treaty 3 area in Canada who came down to visit, observe the school, and they did mention that they're a remote community without access, internet access, and without, I think they're a fly-in community also, or by boat. So the struggles there, I've experienced conversations around it, but we don't necessarily have that problem in Minnesota.
Well, that's fantastic. That's definitely good news. Melissa, what a fascinating topic this is, and thank you so much for the gift of your time. I hope we have the opportunity to talk as you work through this process and start to implement some changes. I hope we have the opportunity to talk about this again.
I look forward to it.
Thanks a lot, Melissa.
You have a good day.
Melissa Boyd this morning, our guest here on Northland Morning. She won a Bush Fellowship in 2017 to help lead the movement to renew and restabilize Ojibwe language here in Minnesota. Journey to Wellness in Indian Country on KUMD is funded in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.